Yeah, it's on. Good morning, Rabbi Yisai. Let's move on to another subject to do with Shavuos coming up, Aboleinu L'Tova, this week. Question is, every time that we line the Aseres HaDibrois, or we line the Shiro, or we line Chazak, well, we don't line Chazak, but we get to Chazak, there's, especially in shuls where there are no pews, there's a lot of scraping of chairs. There's a lot of noise because everybody starts to stand up. And the question is, yeah, al pi halacha, for the Aseres HaDibrois, are you allowed to stand up? Are you supposed to stand up? Or are you forbidden to stand up? In other words, if you're sitting by Kriyas HaTorah, and then we get to the Aseres HaDibrois, do you stand up or don't you stand up? So, let's take the Mechaber in Simon Kuf Mem Vov Sif Dalet. Says the Mechaber in Simon Kuf Mem Vov Sif Dalet, Ein Tzorech Lamoid Me'umot Be'eis Shekoyin Batoyro. Generally speaking, there's no need to stand up during Kriyas HaTorah. Talk about just regular Kriyas HaTorah, whenever this morning you heard Kriyas HaTorah, are you mechuyev to stand or not? Says the Mechaber, you're not mechuyev to stand. Was, wait, we're coming. I said Brashas Kriyas HaTorah. Okay? Says the Ramah, V'yesh machmirim v'oimdim. There are some people who are machmir and they do stand. V'chein also Maharam. And the Maharam, brought down b'shem the Mordechai, says that the Maharam Rishon used to stand up during Kriyas HaTorah. Okay, so the question is, so you've got a Mechaber who says that you don't need to stand, and you've got a Ramah that says that you L'chayra Yesh Machmirin. There are some people who are Machmir. Says the Mishabura, Ein Tzorech Lamoid, says the Mishabura, V'afilu Hoim De Malabimo. He says, according to the Shitta, that you don't have to stand up for Kriyas HaTorah. When they build the Bima, they could build two seats on either side of the Bima for the Gaboim. And the Gaboim, the two people standing at the side, and even the person who just had the Aliyah before, would be allowed to sit around the base, around the Kriyas HaTorah. The only time when you're mechuyev to stand up for a Sefer Torah is when the Sefer Torah is itself moving. When the Sefer Torah is on the move, when you're carrying the Sefer Torah, when the Chazan is bringing the Sefer Torah from the Aron HaKodesh to the Bima and on the way back, then he says, then you're mechuyev to stand. Aval kashemunachas b'mekoimo. But when the Sefer Torah is resting on the Bima, ein tzorech. And you can see from the Loshen throughout the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah took on like the Mechaber. There's no chiyuv to stand up. No chiyuv to stand up during Kriyas HaTorah. Yeah?
Can you cover it?
Well?
Can you cover it instead?
It doesn't make any difference in theory. I mean, you cover it, lichvoy the Sefer Torah, but covering won't make any difference as to whether or not you have to stand. And he brings down even that, let's say, when somebody is holding the Sefer Torah, yeah, after Galila. Yeah, I do Hagba Galila, and then the person who had Hagba is sitting and holding the Sefer Torah. You're not mechuyev to stand up for the Sefer Torah. That's not called on the move. When the Sefer Torah is on the move, moving from one place to another, then you're mechuyev to stand up for the Sefer Torah. And Pashtus, according to the Mechaber and the Mishnah Berurah, and even the Ramah Lagaba Yesh Machmirin, and it's important to remember we're talking about Yesh Machmirin, because tomorrow we'll talk about Mekilin and a different issue. Yeah, so that you're not mechuyev to stand. Yeah. And that, right. And then he says, Be'esh Shekoyin Batorah. I just want to finish this, and then I'll hand over. Chaskel Ebert, yeah? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Uvashas Amiras Borchu, at the time when the person who's got the Aliyah says Borchu, Va'anias Boruch Hashem Anvorech Lo'ilam Voet, Zok the Mishnah Berurah, Lekula Alma Tzorech Lamoid. Everybody agrees that the person who's having the Aliyah has to stand. The Bal Koyrah has to stand. The Bal Koyrah stands. The person who's having the Aliyah stands. And when he says Baruch Hu Hashem Anvorach, the Tzibur has to stand as well. And answer Baruch Hashem Anvorach, L'kul Alma Tzorech Lamoid, Dehu Dovo Shebikidusho. Because Baruch Hu, yeah, because Baruch Hu, come to it, yeah. Because Baruch Hu and Baruch Hashem Anvorach Lo'olam are Dovo Shebikidusho. Es Nemefregen, yeah. isn't Kriyas HaTorah Dovah Shebikidusha? Yeah, we'll
yeah,
talk about...
The
Olam
is not noig even by the
Bochuk. What? The Olam is not noig? It doesn't say that anywhere. Yeah, the Olam is not noig. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people who are sitting anyway, and we'll come to it later. We'll discuss that tomorrow as to why, because my time is up. I don't want to take the time now. Bliada, tomorrow we'll discuss why the Olam doesn't stand.
Start your day, Torahway, Northwest London, Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, Aleph Sivan, 17th of May, Rabbi Shlomi Wise, Shlita, Rabbinic Coordinator of KLBD. In Yonei Bris Mila. This week's Torah is sponsored anonymously by Rabbi Nishmas, our esteemed founder, Rabbi Yosef Doe, Ben Rabbi Shimon Michal, Tzvi Itzkovitz, Zichrono, Livracho.
Good morning, everyone. Good Chodesh, Tichroch, Ketioch, good everything. Okay, so I got asked very late in the day to speak. And as is frequently the case, I haven't fully prepared everything in an orderly manner, so apologies. But I thought I'd take a little bit of a break from Kashrus and talk a little bit about Bris Mila. Why should I talk about Bris Mila? So there's two reasons. First of all, Baruch Hashem, Hashem Zikani, to be machnis, my son, newborn son, to the Bris Hashanah Ravina recently. So Baruch Hashem. You and unfortunately he wasn't well when he was first born, so he got a mila at about 2 weeks. So I'll talk a little bit about those in Yonim. I also want to take the opportunity to thank people in the community, the Kehillah Baruch Hashem, Mikam Chai Yisrael. Really, you start to see people come, and the chasodim are amazing. There's an organization called Yad Le'im who do a lot of amazing work in the quiet, people offering help in all sorts. Particularly, I want to thank Mrs. Miriam Nadler, who arranged the whole amazing group of people to do volunteering and things. Anyway, there's a vote. I think people know that Gemara in Pesachim talks about, we say every day, the Kei Avraham, Kei Yitzchak, and Kei Yaakov, and Hashem made a bris with each of the others, and for each of them, for their different middos, really. That's the way the Rishonim explain it. And there's a vault from Rishonim Shonas Polya that to say, when the Gemara says, Yochel ye chosmin kulam, and then the answer, the Gemara says, B'chol chosmin, that we don't finish the bracha with ke ovus, we say mogin avraham. So, as Rishonim Shonas Polya says, that the zchus of the Yeshua of Geula, Asida, will be B'zchus Chesed, which is therefore the middle of Avraham. And Baruch Hashem, I've experienced that recently, so more power to them. I will say that this is a bit of a debated point. It's not so clear that Arachaim, and I think it's Parashat Tetzaveh, Vato Tetzaveh, he explains that the various Geulas are the B'zchus of different Ovos, and the last one is B'zchus Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says that Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't want to come to be help the Geula when people are atzlonim from learning Divrei Torah. So if they're atzlonim, they don't learn Torah the way they should, which implies that the B'zchus is really Torah. But this is a debated point. I think we'll be happy if we have all the various B'zchus. The Gaon famously says in Mitzrayim, "Vayishlo Ishmerehu Ishmael Meis Reusah." So many from Farshim ask the question that they borrowed Kalim when they're going out Mitzrayim. They borrowed clothing, etc., all these types of things. And it says Reehu, and now Reehu is usually specifically Jewish people. And here they're borrowing or taking Kalim and things, gold and whatever, from the Egyptians. How can it call Reehu? So some say, okay, before Matan Torah, you can call a non-Jew Reehu as well. However, the Gaon says no, they would borrow from each other, meaning that they would do chesed with one another. And if they do chesed, Yidden do chesed with one another, then the non-Jews will also look kindly upon the Jewish people and do chesed with them. So those are just some ideas to mention about chesed and the idea of the bris. I will say it's a very big ace rotzen when one does a bris. What is the connection a little bit to the tzibur? So okay, this is me personally, I've had a bris, very nice. I mean, I arranged a bris for my son. Which is itself an interesting point as well, that it's a mitzvah of the father rather than a mitzvah of the boy. We would understand that, I think, because he's only 8 days old, or however old he is. But it's another point, actually, there. We'll maybe get to talk about. But there is an idea. Gemara in Krisus, Daf Tes, talks about the fact that when a ger comes to be Megaya, we need four items. Right? So most people will say Mila and Tefillah. Right? There's four actually, and they learnt from Am Yisrael. So they learnt from Klal Yisrael when they came to get the Torah. So what are they? So we have Mila. We know that Sukkim Sekim Morim Hayu. Everyone did Mila in Mitzrayim. They need to do Tefillah. And the Gemara asks, when you see the Klal Yisrael do Tefillah. So another thing that they did was they had the Dam Bris. So Moshe Rabbeinu sprinkled on them Hazor from the Korban, and he sprinkled it on Klal Yisrael. It's a self aness. That's in the Torah. We're looking in Parashat Next Parashat Mishpatim. And there's also Kabbalas HaMitzvos. So you've got four items. You've got Mila Tefillah, Korban, and you've got Kabbalas HaMitzvos. So the question is asked, and the Gemara, what's going on? So we need a korban. How can you be Misgaya nowadays? Right. So obviously, a Jewish boy who's born isn't being Megaya. He's having his mila. He doesn't necessarily tefillah. He doesn't have tefillah either. He doesn't have anything. He's just Jewish. But a ger, how can a ger, since the Churban Bayis, ever join the Jewish people? Actually, we say makrivim shem ein bayis. We're sure in the I think it's in Adius, the Mishnah says that we can makriv ein ashem ein bayis, but we don't practically. So how's the ger do this? So the Gemara says there's a special limud. It says the Dora Seichem that the Torah tells us that there will be converts throughout your generations, and therefore it's understood that. How we don't know 100%, but it seems that the Chazal, Hashem wanted that there should be converts, and therefore the Chazal understood that the korban is sort of it's like on credit, it's put on the side, and the Gemara says that it used to be that they would put away money for a korban. When a ger would come to Megaya, they would tell him put away money for the korban, and when you'll bring a korban for the giyur. But then the Gemara says that they saw that this money was getting lost because it's hektish money, and then so they said to them, okay, don't put away the money, but you know that you've got to bring a korban when Mashiach comes. Mr. Shem, it's going to be a lot of korbanos. One of them is going to be all the game whoever converted throughout the generations have to each bring a korban on their gil. Okay, so that's an inyan which is connected with the upcoming Yom Tov. I'll mention a couple of points before going into things. You know what, I'll actually mention before we even get to the Mila, one of the things that I experienced and other people experience, which has got pretty much nothing to do with the Mila, but part of the Mila ceremony is giving a baby a name. And of course, this ends up being, unfortunately, sometimes a bit of a tense thing. Many Sfarim bring down that the it's not a good idea to fight over these things, and they actually talk about it being a sakana for the child. I'm not really 100% sure why. It seems that the time of the child before the Mila, particularly, is a very fraught time, and it seems that the various minhagim have sprung up, the Vachnacht, people staying up, or Sfardim have Brit Yitzchak, and people stay up all night, and to Shmira and guarding, all sorts of things, minhagim to leave the Ismail. The knife of the Mila under the pillow. We don't want any shkaitas. No. There's an interesting question whether a I don't remember who it is now. The poskim who bring down, there was a question whether a shochet and a mol, whether a mol should be a shochet. It's a very interesting question, and they pushed it away. They wanted to say that maybe they don't quite go together, and there's a question about whether a person will be a bit too rough, and interesting question. In time, as we'll see with a certain case, it's definitely been the accepted that there's no issue for a moel to be a shechet or vice versa, but you do need to make sure you've got the right knife to hand. There were lots of different minhagim, actually. Just me going through these things. I'll mention maybe a couple. And I'm not sure, again, when you have things in the Maharil, for example, Maharil has a lot on Hilchos Mila. I'm not sure all of these things are practiced nowadays in terms of minhagim. But in terms of giving a name, so generally speaking, the Medrash says that used to be in the times when Avosenu, our Medrash Rabbi in Parashat Shmos, says that our earlier generations had Ruach HaKodesh, and they used to give our Shem HaMa'ora. So we see throughout Chumash, for example, the Imahos gave Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. It's not based on parents or grandparents or anything like that. It's not based on the parasha of the week either. It's based on what was occurring. And the Medrash says that nowadays we don't have Ruach HaKodesh, so we give our Shem HaVoseim. So we name after grandparents and things like that. That famously, amongst the Sfardim, it's acceptable to give a name which is on a living relative. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says, at least for a tzaddik, he seems to be, even though Minhag Ashkenaz, Sefer Hasidim, one doesn't do such a thing. It seems considered a sakona to do such a thing, but for a Gadol B'Yisrael, Ramosha is mashma, you can even do it on a living person. But anyway, there are midrashim that point out that Aharon HaKohen at his Leviah had 80,000 people named after him. Because we know Aharon HaKohen was someone who was osik in Sholem Bayis and various and bringing Sholem between neighbors, and he had, and as a sort of a token, a tribute for that, so he had 80,000 people at his Leviah with his name. So it seems that at least once upon a time this was acceptable. There is a sefer called Nishmas Yisrael. I think he talks about Hechzavelus, and he's a very in-depth sefer. He says he can't find any source anywhere that there's an obligation to name, and he says the idea that there's some sort of merit to the child or anything doesn't seem to be the case. Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky says it could be, you know, there is some sort of merit to the child if you name after someone. Maybe you came to Rechazal, things like that. But anyway, these are things which, as I say, can be fraught with tension, but it's not something to focus on. In terms of the Mila itself, the Mila has in Parashat Lech Lecha, the Pasuk says, I saw some very nice ideas from Simcha Lieberman's Chayim Racha, who points out Vehei is the same osis as the Shem Havaya. We know that it's also the same osis as Vahoya. Vehei is also Vahoya, you can read Vahoya. And Chazal say Vahoya is a Lashon of Simcha. And we know that to this day, Gemara says that Mila is something that, the mitzvah that we makayim with Simcha. And he says that that's why, so Gemara and Shabbos Kuf Lamed Amud Aleph. And that's what he says, that every time we find it's a Lashon of Simcha, and it's a Lashon of also of Brocha, because you have a Tminus. The Gemara actually says, and this was something that came up, someone said to, I won't go into the details, someone mentioned the fact that there's an expression, I don't know if this is something that people are familiar with, but when a son is born into the mishpacha, it's a refuah for the whole mishpacha. The context of that is to do with avedus. So the Gemara says, and it's Yerushalmi, that when unfortunately lo aleinu someone passes away, so that whole year there's a certain mitzvah din against the whole mishpacha. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says, kol shiva cherev shlufa. So for the shiva, the actual, so to speak, the sword is drawn out. It's actually out. So it's quite a threatening time. And until shloshim, it's hiro fefes. And then the 12 months, it's chozer satara. So it goes back into its sheath after 12 months. And the Gemara compares it to a kippah shel avonim. So you have like a dome of stone where one of the stones has come loose. So then the whole thing can come down. But if a ben zocha is born, then that heals the bad muzzle of the family, so to speak. So it seems to be that it doesn't matter who the person is, and doesn't apply to a girl. Now that sounds a little bit chauvinistic, right? If a girl is born, that should also be a simcha. It is a simcha, and one's obligated to be. Makir Tov, so why isn't that enough? Why does it have to be Ben Zocha? So the point he explains, Rav Simcha, is that the idea of the child is being born is not so much the child being born, it's actually the Mila aspect that is the part that is Merapa, the Mishpacha. He brings the Tshuva of the Marashal, Marshal and Simon Ayin. Yeah, he's talking about in a case where you have, unfortunately, a person who's lost a parent. And at the same time, he's got a child to give Mila to. And the question is, an Oinon generally we say is potter from all the mitzvahs. So how can he go and do the Mila? So the Marshal has a long piece to explain. I shouldn't say that. By the Marshal standards, it's actually a short piece. But he says that the idea that an Onin is potter from all the mitzvahs is not absolute. And he gives examples where it's generally to do with Torah and brachos and things like that. He says, but there are obligations where an Onin is not potter. And one of them is when there is an obligation, especially it's Yom HaShmini, right, then he's got to do it now, then that comes first. And I won't go into the whole tshuva of the Marshal, but at the end he mentions this point about also this would be good for the family and good for maybe for the mace as well, that because it's Nisrap Kol Mishpacha. The reason why it's an obligation for the father as opposed to the child is that before he actually has an idea, very interesting idea, that a person, when they're an Orel, doesn't necessarily have the impetus or the push to do a Mila. This is actually, and he says it's something that needs to come from an external support. He says even Rashi brings down in Parashat Lech Lecha that Hashem helped Avraham with the Mila. It's very hard. Again, we don't look at it that way. The Gemara in Chulin, from the first sugi of Chulin, what was Hakol Shechtin? One of the questions: who does it come to include? Hakol is the rabbis come to include. I think many people have done this recently in Daf Yomi. If there's Daf Yomi, so one of them is Oril, and Oril is it has a din tumah. We generally say that an Orel, if he's a Jewish person, can do most things, but he is Tumah. And a certain Tumah that you know, holds back someone from doing these things, from coming into the Bris. And therefore, it's given to someone else to do. I actually know a story personally of someone I know who was who grew up in the Soviet Union. He was born in the Soviet Union, I should say. And as a child, came over to, went to America. And he had his bris later on, not sure how old he was, maybe 18 or something. And he had a grandfather who'd grown up under communism and had never had a bris. And his grandfather was something, I can't remember the age now, but it was definitely over 70, and I don't remember the exact age, but it was maybe more 80. And he was inspired by his grandson having a bris mila as an adult to then also have a bris mila, and you can imagine it's not the easiest or safest thing for an elderly man to have a bris mila. But again, I was reminded this story that I know because of this idea. So he says that this is the idea of hamol yimol, that the one who's already got a mila and is already in the bris sort of brings it in. It's a bit like someone's in the club, schleps someone else into the club, and he says the same idea for Torah, that Once one's got someone who's already in the level of learning Torah, he can help. So that's why it's very important that person has a Rebbe and someone to bring them into the limit of the Torah. Okay, I'll mention a few points other than this. First of all, I don't want to talk too much at length about this because this is a medical question, so this is the sort of question you ask a doctor, although I understand that there's a bit of a difference in terms of viewing jaundice and things like that versus, you know, from a Gemara perspective versus a medical perspective, and I'm not going to, again, as I say, I certainly say for Torah, ask your own local Orthodox rabbi, so certainly with medical things I'm going to say ask your own competent local medical practitioner, someone with a license. But for understand, there aren't numbers. There's a lot of discussion. That we have a Moel here as well, Dr. Anna Moel. There's a lot of discussion about bilirubin counts and things like that. And as far as I'm aware, I mean, people, different Moelim will tell you different things. There isn't a hard and fast rule. A lot of the time, when these things come up, I work in kashra, so one of the questions is when you kasha about temperatures. And I've heard, a certain great Rav in this country who wants to talk about certain temperatures. If you get the water up to certain Celsius, he was talking about over 95. And the truth is that's not really grounded, at least in a makor. I mean, the Gemara didn't have thermometers, as far as I'm aware. I mean, they certainly did. If they did, they didn't talk about anyway Celsius or Fahrenheit or Kelvin or anything like that. And therefore, generally, we understand that you have boiling water, meaning with yumala babus, and that wouldn't matter. And then one of the nafkaminas will be if you do it with pressure. So, you can sometimes do things under a vacuum. Would it need to be 100 degrees? If it's malababus, or if you're low sea level, high up on a mountain, water boils at different temperatures. And of course, it doesn't really matter to us what the exact Celsius is. It's more a question of boiling water. So too, with if you're going to talk about Billy Rubin, leaving aside the fact that the postmen don't talk about Billy Rubin, count... of course, you know, they don't have numbers or anything like that. Just to explain briefly, and again, this is a layman's terms, that basically there's different components, like everything in the natural world, there's different components, and bilirubin is the old red blood cells. So you basically, when you have them broken down, mainly in the spleen, the hemoglobin is split into different sections, and that they're measuring that to see the waste going out of the body. And of course, the different numbers given. So, of course, the baby himself, or it's a him usually, because you're measuring it for a boy, for a bris, will have one level. There's different measurements for American or European, whether you're doing it by weight or by molecules. And, it does tend to start at one level. So I'll use the American terminology, even though normally, we here in England and in the European Union, we use different terminology, but the ones, the post-skim that talk about this are mostly America and Israel, and they talk about 1 to 3 milligrams when they're born, and then it goes up. And then there's debate here about, you know, how much, what the levels are. So as I say, in practical terms, you'll ask the moel, because usually they'll have their Masoris will have their acceptable number. There is a Sefer Divrei Chachamim which came out in 1986 from Arizeb Ginsburg, who went around asking various poskim, very major poskim of the day, questions. He also got information from others. And I believe in recent years, last few years, it's been greatly expanded. I'm not sure how much of that was actually done by him, that he actually went and asked. I think these ones are more sort of secondhand. The ones he originally did were actually his own, and he then talks about the numbers. Again, these are, apologies, they are American numbers because he's an American, but he talks about different Moelim telling him different things. He said that Rosh Lem Zaman Orbach said the number 12, which out, you know, usually 15 is considered very high. He says already 12, but again, a lot of these things would be as and when. Again, the Gemara itself talks about the Gemara. It's a Gemara Chulin. I don't think the Daf Yomi is up to it yet. But Gemara Chulin Mem Zayin on the base. So Rav Nosson says he once went to Krachei Ayam, into islands, and he found a woman who had three sons who died. And she brought the son for him, and he was red. He had a redness. So he said, "Wait, wait till the blood is better absorbed into the body." So you see, this wasn't they didn't do a blood test, and they did it by appearance, and that's what she did, and he lived, and they called him Nosson HaBavli on his name. So again, you see that. So you can name someone after someone who's alive. And then he says he went to a Medina Kaputkia, and he saw a son. Again, same idea. They had a woman whose children had died through Mila, and she brought him to him. And he saw that he was lacking blood because he had a certain green yorok. Yorok in the Gemara's terminology doesn't mean literally green, and you know we don't know exactly what it means, but it wasn't a healthy pallor. And he said, wait till the blood comes. In other words, he felt that he was lacking blood. And again, same thing happened. She waited. They mailed him later, and then they again called him. It's interesting. They called him again. Das Habavli on his name. So these are things where, generally speaking, it was done by appearance. And I think today generally also you have jaundice. You can see it either yellowness or redness, etc. And there's various tests that can be done. There is a question it's brought here regarding, and I this would have to. I can't. You'd have to ask a doctor about this, if this is really... apparently there was a case where a woman was nursing a baby, and the doctors felt that, for whatever reason, it wasn't going well, maybe they really don't explain the question here, what the issue was. Sometimes, especially when a baby's born, naturally it's very hard to feed. The mother isn't producing milk straight away. He needs certain hormones and things to get things going. So it could be possibly he just wasn't getting enough food. But it just says that he was nursing and he wasn't healthy. And they said if they bottle feed him, then he's more likely to have a bris on time rather than feeding. And the question was, what takes precedence? So Ryaka Kalinetsky answered that, that you should leave it with them, even if it means... pushing off the mila, that you should actually let him feed from the mother. I presume again that indicates that there was some sort of feeding going on. Otherwise, it seems a little bit pushing the limits of what should be done. But so he says that it's important for him to nurse from the mother, and therefore you know. It could also be there's no guarantee. You know, these things are not very easy to measure. They say, oh, well, if he has bottle feed, then he'll be able to have a bris on time. So he told him to leave things as they were.
There is a condition called breast milk jaundice, where right. For whatever reason, breast milk is accentuating the jaundice for whatever reason, uh-huh. And stopping it is then medically advised. It's unusual, but it happens.
Okay. Shkach. Okay. There's a question which I had myself, I didn't paskin from this, but it's just sometimes it's just a practical thing, which is that as soon as bris milah is a mitzvah in the Torah, it's mentioned in the Torah, Avram made a bris milah, there are some say it's 3 days after the milah, but anyway, you make a soon as bris milah, so it should be meat, and the problem is, first thing in the morning, some people will maybe have a little l'chaim, but they certainly don't want meat, and this is the question. So again, Rabbi Yaakov Kanetsky said that people don't want meat, it's understandable. He says you should try to at least include some fish, so it gives a bit of chashivas to the meal, as opposed to just having milchik rogalach or something like that. It should be a proper meal. I want to mention whilst I'm talking about this that there is a question that comes up, and I'm surprised a little bit that people. I was surprised when someone disagreed with me, or at least challenged me. And it's open, it's in the Nos Akelim. It's in the small print, but it is in the Nos Akelim as well. So, in Yerodea Shin Tzadik Aleph, there's a siman Ovel Osa B'chol Mini Simcha. So we know that an Ovel, the lane is not able to go to Simcha. So the classic one would be Chasana. There's all sorts of questions when you have a parent or a member of the family. They want to attend the chasana, and it's a bit of a problem, and there's music, and what do you do? But there's a list of items where the Beis Lechem Yehuda here and the Gnim Arshah, they point out that there are sudas such as, sudas, there's a Gnim Arshah in Shin Tzadik Aleph, sudas suuda beleil Shabbos b'shavua shanoi ledbar zacha, so basically what we would call a shalom zacha, and sudas chinuch habayis, and Sudas Bar Mitzvah, the Sudas Chanukah, it seems to be that they were used to be more of a thing. And all these things, an Ovel is allowed to attend. So obviously not in the Shiva, but afterwards one can. And what's the understanding here? Why can he do this? So as I explained to people, that there's basically there are two differing or fighting, two different values fighting for supremacy. You've got the mitzvah aspect, so it has to be a sudas mitzvah, and that's itself the question of what's called sudas mitzvah. The original, for example, a bar mitzvah, we find probably the earliest source, that I, at least one that I've seen, is the Yamshel Shlomo. So that's the Marshal in the 1500s in Poland, that bar mitzvah is considered a suz mitzvah. It's brought down in the Shach earlier, in Hilchos Talmud Torah. You've got the suz mitzvah, you've also got the simcha aspect. So the mitzvah aspect, the Ovel has no issue with, right? It's great, you join the suz mitzvah, the mitzvah part is great, but the simcha is the problem. So the question is, what's the simcha, and what level is the simcha, and what level is the mitzvah? So a wedding, a chasana, is considered a mitzvah rabbah. And the Gemara talks about even Meshachar and Eved for the sake of that's a mitzvah rabbah. The problem is, it's also considered a very big simcha. So Magen Avraham brings in Hilchos Shabbos regarding the Maharil said that one can't have a chasana without music. He said, better to push off the chasana. That's quite a statement. And there's a discussion there, can you get non-Jewish people to play music on Shabbos? So the simcha of a wedding, of a chasana, is very high. So therefore, an ovel can't go to that, even though it's a very big mitzvah, but it's also a very big simcha. Something which is a simcha, but is not as great a simcha, and is a big mitzvah, would be allowed. So interestingly, bar mitzvah wasn't, at least, I don't know, you have to ask a shayla about bar mitzvah nowadays, because bar mitzvahs now have become mini chasanas. Right, they have, especially in Eretz Yisrael, they have music, they have dancing, they have. It's maybe not quite on the level of a wedding, but it's certainly a lot more, much more grand than it used to be. A bar mitzvah was you know, a small thing. I once went to a bar mitzvah of a wealthy family, and they had a buffet, and I thought, oh, it was huge, and I was getting my coat getting ready to go, and someone said to me, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to Mishnah Mazel Tov. So there's a 7-course meal coming up, and there was a band as well, not just a person on a keyboard, there was a full band. So if you get to that sort of level, again, that sort of bar mitzvah, I'm not sure, but something like a Shalom Zachar, which is considered a suz mitzvah, is very low level. There's no music usually. It's on Friday night and etc. And therefore, that's something that can be attended. There's actually from the Truma Sadeshan, it seems that actually that this was Shavua Ben may have been done the night before, like we have Achnacht or Bris Yitzchak, and it was moved. The Truma Sadeshan explains it was moved to Friday night because in Europe people were very often away. They could live in small villages, and you wanted a minyan. And people weren't there during the week necessarily. So to get a minyan, they made it on Shabbos. There are other aspects to the Shabbos, as we know, connection with the bris. But it was considered a suz mitzvah, and it used to be an actual suda. It wasn't just arbus and beer. It wasn't just chickpeas and beer and things like that. It was actually a suda. And it's considered still to this day a mitzvah, and therefore an ovel can attend. Just to mention a few other points, there is a question about if a child is born at a time which we're not 100% sure if it's been a shmoshes, and there is a machlokas in the Rishonim, the Rosh and the Rambam, about in a case where if a boy is born ben a shmoshes, it's not doicha Shabbos. Fine, okay, but is it doicha Yom Tov Sheni? So even Yom Tov Sheni, which Pashtus, you know, depending how you look at it, it could be Durabonon, it's not Doicha. According to the Rosh, Mila Shlo Bezmana is not Doicha Yom Sheni. And the Rambam says it is Doicha Yom Sheni. And the Mechaber, the writes that it's not Doicha, even it's Ben Ashmoshus, which means it's a Sofik. The Nodbi Huda it takes issue with this, as do other achronim. Medu Huda is in Madura Kamar Chaim Simon Lamed, and they say that there's a svek sveka. First of all, maybe it's a shaila when is the right time? Maybe it is the right time. And even if you'll tell me it's the wrong time, but they look at second day Yom Tov as a sofik in itself. We're applying the halachas as if it's a sofik Yom Tov, sofik chol. And therefore, he wants to say that it's a svek sveka. The Reb Kiv Eiger and in Hagos there on the Shulchan Aruch and the Chasam Sofer and Simon Reish and Shuvah Simon Reish Nun, they agree with the Noid B'Yehuda. They don't agree with his reasoning. They have different reasons, but they say you could do this on the second day Yom Tov. Another question that came up is the interesting question about when a baby is induced. Now, I didn't think that, and again, I'm sure the Moelim will have their protocols and the rules. I saw something from Rav Henkin that he understood that an induced baby is not considered a regular birth, which, again, if we're not talking about necessarily cesarean here, we're talking about a birth which is just moved along with possibly. He doesn't explain what the induction was, but he understands it to be an unusual birth, and therefore it wouldn't be doicha shabbos. Now, I don't think, and again, this is something for the Moelim and the Rabban to say, but it's considered Yotze Dofen. There's an expression even nowadays in Hebrew, Yotze Dofen, which means a cesarean, you come out from the side as opposed to from underneath. Yotze Dofen is an expression for it's an unusual thing, Yotze Dofen. And therefore, he says that this is an interesting question. And you have these questions about various items that are not only cesarean. There's a question about something, an IVF birth, is that something that's doicha shabbos, and various other things. I want to finish with a couple of questions, a couple of shailas that came up in time. One of the great rabbonim who dealt with a lot of questions with Mila and Geirus was Rav Dov Tzvi Hoffman, known as Mlamed Hoel, who was the Rav. He was a Talmud of the Maram Shik. He was originally from Hungary. He came to live in Germany and took over from Israel Hildesheimer in the Rabbinic Seminar there in Berlin. And he has an interesting question. He's known, and not necessarily everyone agrees, and there's different opinions. The Achiezer also wrote, there were challenging times in the late 1800s and early 1900s regarding people marrying out, and unfortunately to this day this question comes up in Israel, when you have people who are not strictly Jewish in the sense that they may be Israeli, the law of return allows for people who are not halachically Jewish to become Israeli citizens, and now they want to marry a Jewish girl. And is there room for leniency to allow them to marry? And this is a very debated point, very hotly debated point to this day. He has in the third chelik of Mlamed Hoel, he has in Yoridei as well in the second, but he has a story of a Jewish, what is he actually, a boy who had a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, and the father arranged a milah for him, and we don't know whether he also did tevila. So obviously, the son is not Jewish. If his mother's not Jewish, he's not Jewish, but he gave him a milah, and the question is, did he do a tevila as well? And we don't know. And
tevila on the baby.
Yeah, because he was born from a non-Jewish mother, so he's a goy. So you're going to be Megayim. The Mila will be for the sake of Gil. So did you do a Tevila? And the question is that now this boy's grown up. He's not, so he doesn't, so not Shomer Torah Mitzvah, he's Mechal HaShabbos. But he does contribute to the Kupa of the Kol. So he's sort of a paying member. And he wants to now marry a Jewish girl. And the question is now, what do you do? So to get him to become a Shomer Torah Mitzvah is not going to happen. Can you be Masada Kedushin for this person? So so the Lama Hill explains that the different aspects of Mila, we talked about the different things that are needed to become a convert. They don't have to be all together at the same time. We think of Mila, Tevila, right? It has to be, it doesn't have to be concurrent or it doesn't have to be together. And he says that if it's a complicated tshuva, but he says that if you would do Tevila, later, he says it's a sofik whether he did tefila. So if he does another tefila or first tefila is misofik, we have to assume that he is a sofik deraisa, that he may be Jewish, even though he brings Tosfos and Ksubas that says ger cotton is pashtus ger derabbanan, not ger deraisa. However, many Rishonim disagree with that, and it seems to be that the poskim don't follow Tosfos and Ksubas. So he says that if it's a sofik deraisa, we have to assume he is Jewish, in which case you have to be machmeh with him for all the things. And he says that you can tovelim later. And even though that wears the Kabbalah's mitzvahs, the Kabbalah's mitzvahs would have been what his father did originally. And he says, which is a bit questionable, because I don't know how religious his father was. If his father had an affair, or whatever, had a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, then obviously he wasn't exactly the most religious of people. But he did give him a milah, so he did want him to be Jewish. He says you should give it. You should ask him to take upon himself the major mitzvahs that you know he will accept, things like almost like the Shev Mitzvah Spinei Noach, not specific because of that, and things like Tzedakah and Kibbutz and things which he will give a couple, and he says that will be enough. There's a tshuva, which is a very basic tshuva, but it threw up an interesting side question, which was received by the Beis Din in 1962, and it came from Tripoli in Libya, and there was a story there where there was a woman, a girl, who basically had a relationship with a non-Jew, and presumably a Muslim, and had a boy, and they'd given the boy a milah. So he's a Jewish boy, but they'd given the boy a milah in the shul. And this caused a very big machlokas, because they felt... Sorry? Milah.
What kind of milah?
They gave him a milah, but they gave it to him in the normal way in the shul, and derech kovod, and this broke out into a very massive machlokas. A lot of people criticized the rabbi at the time, there's a rabbi here, Rabbi Susan Buchritz, who writes to the Beis Din, and he says this boy isn't a mamzer. Right, as we know, he's not from the psulim that makes a mamza. When you have a posel, someone who's very posel, then the mechaber does say you don't give him a meal in the shul, etc. There are, these things. But this went on at the end of 1962 for quite a while. I'll be mekatzer because I'm running out of time. And basically, what's interesting is that the rabbonim the Beis Din, Dan Grossnas and Dan Rappaport, Dan Lu, they wrote back that you are correct. One of the things they wanted to do was, unfortunately, they wanted to fire the moel. It's always the moel gets it right. The moel, who was also the shoychet, by the way. So that goes back to what we said before. And they wanted to fire him because they felt this was a terrible thing, a shanda, as they say. And he says that no, they shouldn't do that. He does say something interesting. He says that in the letter back they write that he's Yisrael Habo Abbas Nochi Habo Abbas Yisrael Holy Mimena Havlad Kosher V'chaim Lemoylev U'mal Moysa Afilu B'Shabbos B'Mila B'Zman. This is a very interesting thing. It says that if the son is born and he's born and the Mila is on Shabbos, you do it on Shabbos. And this is brought down from the Shulchan Aruch, from the Pesachei Tshuva B'Shem Tferes Lemoysha. And then he goes on to say that even though technically, yes, you give him a milah and he's a full Jew, but the Rabbi Kiva Eger brings the Marikash to say that any time there's a nidnud avera, even to Rabbonon, if it's known in the Tzibur, then you don't say Ashrei Tivcha Skarim Chatzurecha, etc. You don't say the Shvachim to the Avon Me'im. What's interesting is that this is actually in debate. This is actually not like Rav Kiva Eger. Rav Kiva Eger says it's choshesh for a shit in the Gemara that a baby that's born from a non-Jewish father that you don't malhim on Shabbos. And I believe that today the policy tends to be not to mal such a baby on Shabbos. So it's interesting that based in
Rav Kiva Eger, the mother would be brought up by the mother, and she and Rav Kiva Eger discusses brought up, therefore.
Won't be a Shabbos. Here, the woman didn't keep anything, and yet the Beis Din at the time said Paskin like the first emotion that you would give him a milah even on Shabbos. However, I understand there are differences of opinion, and Rav Kiva might say not. So when this comes up, the Moel has to ask a Shaila whether to give him a milah for Yom HaShemini on Shabbos. The baby is now 2.5 weeks old, so Mina was on Wednesday. Yes.
What was wrong with the baby? The baby wasn't even born from a non-Jewish. this case in Libya, he was.